This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest Review Show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Show, being done a little differently this week. There's no pre-prepared introduction. There's no show plan. Not that we tend to read much of it anyway, but there's been no real prep because this, of course, is a direct reaction to today's game, today at the time of recording and the time of broadcasting. That is 1-1 against Brighton. And not so much the result, but really the level of performance, the level of ambition. These are all the kind of things that people have been talking about. You know, how do we react to that? How do we feel about that? And most importantly, you know, Roy, our manager, is coming in for some quite sustained criticism that probably goes even beyond what the likes of Patrick and I and Mike have talked about in the past. Really feels like a potential turning point, which is odd because it wasn't a defeat. It was a point. It gives us 7 points from our first 5 games, which is over the 1 point per game average that we have for 2020. But hey, you know, that's, I suppose you could argue that's an improvement if you're trying to add balance. But you know, we've got live comments coming in already for those of you watching, and we'll be covering those as we go. We've also had comments in, obviously, on Twitter, Facebook. DMs, our private conversations, all sorts of stuff where people are getting in touch, and we'll be talking about all those comments as well. But listen, where we usually start, guys, and we'll try and start with a potential bit of perspective in the sense that let's think about where we were before kickoff. Obviously, it's a massive game against Brighton. So the nerves are in there. You know, you two were obviously in the watch along with me, and you knew how, should we say, ratty I was prior to that game. I get nervous, I get pent up, I get aggressive. All I want is for us to win, and arguably I don't care how. Didn't quite pan out that way, but Roy picked a team that probably the only issue I had, well, there were two issues I had, as explained on the watch long. One was the level of defensiveness of the bench, which, you know, now we know that IU had with positive test for COVID-19. We understand why he wasn't involved, but still, it looked like too defensive a bench if we needed to do something to change the game. But obviously, also, Eberechi Eze was dropped out of the side to accommodate Jeffrey Schlupp, which, you know, I was kind of 50-50 on. They're very different players. I like the pace that Schlupp has. I like the directness that he has. But, you know, I think we saw as the game went on, the player that stood out being Jairo Riedewald was because he was patient and comfortable in possession. And we probably would have valued someone like that in terms of Eze being on the pitch. Roy, of course, had ample opportunity to put him on the pitch, but didn't. But let's start. I want to get your feelings, Patrick. You're your first because you're top left on my screen as I look at it. So how were you feeling when you saw the lineup first and foremost before what unfolded?
As I said during the watch along, I didn't have a particular problem with it, but I would have liked to have seen Eze play. I mean, I'm a big fan. I like players that can create, can hold on to the ball, can do things that are special, and that's Eze. like most of you, I don't have a problem with Schlupp. I like how he plays, but I feel as though he plays for a couple of reasons. One, he's one of Roy's favorites. Two, he is very direct. And three, you know, he can carry the ball forward. But again, for me, I'd rather Eze play because I want to see him get bedded in. I see how Roy is. Roy does not bed in players very quickly. I fear that Eze, as far as him ever getting any, you know, real time under Hodgson. So I would have liked to see him play. The other change I had no issue with, I'm a big Sacco fan, but he played Terrell B last match. So bring Cahill in, no problem. You're not going to put PVA in for Mitchell, no problem with there. And you had to start Batshuayi with Ayu's COVID test. But again, the only issue I really had was with Eze, because again, as you mentioned, Gyro is a calm on the ball, and so is Eze. And I felt like Schlupp was really in there, really just to kind of protect Mitchell. And as we saw during the match, it didn't really help for the first 25 or so minutes because he was more centralized under Roy's plan. But it would have been nice, like I said, to have Eze start.
Yeah, and we could stop. I mean, at the time during the game, we're obviously speculating on what that plan might be and why people were doing what they were doing.
Right.
Some comments from Hodgson after the game that we'll come to that seem to indicate perhaps we were giving a little too much credit there. Just before I asked Mike his views pre-game, plenty of comments coming in, some debate going on there as well. That's great. We'll pick and choose from that as we go. Once we've sort of set the tone in this opening stage. So don't think we're ignoring anything that you're saying. We can read it all live. Try and not be too mean in there as well. But Mike, just going back to you, obviously Patrick's given his views. And how did you feel going into that game? Once you saw what Roy selected, many people saying that it looks like on paper it's a really positive team. It's an attacking team. They were looking at the balance of Zaha alongside Batshuayi. Everyone was feeling quite, you know, positive at the time, but you know Palace, how are you feeling?
Well, I mean, it doesn't take us long to decide that certain things make the team better, and I think everyone decided, including myself, that Schlupp being back in the side would be the difference between the first two games and the two games we lost because of his pace. And I think before the game, I was very happy with the setup. I really wanted Eze to be in there as well, but with the 4-4-2, it's kind of hard to see where he'd fit in unless somebody took a dip in form or we played him in the front two. And that's why, you know, he justified his place in the end. I think he played really well. There's a comment here from Dave Newman. I believe we missed IE today, breaking up the play. His energy brings to the team. Well, I think that's why I did that as well. The thing I wanted to bring up was the bench, really. First, the fact that Mitchell was playing over PVA, whether that's because he's not quite fit, but I'm surprised at that. It was also good to see Klein in there. It makes no difference. We could have had Ronaldo, Messi and George Best back from the dead and he still wouldn't have brought any of them on. But, it's nice to see Klein on the bench.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's nice to get at least another look at him back at Palace. But look, I mean, the general feeling the reason we're talking about it is because pre-game there was a degree of optimism. And, you know, really to take us into what we really want to talk about, you know, it's how quickly that can evaporate. You know, we started the game and the thing that you're really looking for, you mentioned it, Mike, that the two games, the Southampton game probably less so, because I really wasn't impressed with that, if I'm being completely honest. But definitely the Man United game, where we came out of the traps firing. You know, we were so happy about it, because after the game, Wilf talked to Silla. I said, back yourselves, be confident, be brave. And that's exactly what we were. And we haven't been that way since. And I don't really know why. But we can talk about, you know, who's actually ultimately responsible for that. But you know, we came out of the traps incredibly slowly, and within 5 minutes of us doing that watch along, guys, you know what we felt like. We felt like we were watching. We knew what had happened, you know. And unfortunately, the comments post game have kind of just reinforced that message, where we looked like a team that have decided, okay, Brighton are going to keep the ball because they're a possession based team, so we'll just enable that, and that's the way we have to play today because that's what they do. And there's no point did they enter into anybody's mind. Well, hold on. Why do they get to dictate that? Why do they get to be a possession-based team, come to Selhurst, dominate the ball. And the only reason that they get to do that is if you let them do that. Did they let us be a possession-based team? When we had possession of the ball, did they stop, watch us pass it around the back? No, they were on us every single second of every single part of that game. And the fact that, I mean, let's get straight into it. And I want reactions from this, because after the game, Roy Hodgson was asked about Brighton's performance, which was considerably better than ours. And he was clearly irritated, but he doesn't know irritation when we get to the second comment. He really doesn't. He says, I thought that they were good, but it's not my job to assess them. Kind of is your job, mate. Kind of is your job to assess them both before and after the game to see what you could have done differently, maybe. But anyway, he said, I've got my idea what players on my team can do and set them up to play. I was satisfied with what they achieved.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
He was satisfied with what the players achieved today.
So we achieved one shot on goal off of the penalty that Wilf scored. He has got to be joking, seriously. So now you're going to wind me up. See, the thing is, Watch Along really helped me, because watching with you guys, I really wasn't that bothered. Normally, when I watch a match by myself, I get really, really upset. I am on Twitter at the same time I'm tweeting. It's really bad. Today wasn't as bad because I was with you, and but that comment really winds me up right now. He has got to be joking. It is, that was one of the worst performances I've seen at a Palace side in a very long time, and that's saying a lot. It really is, because we didn't put out our stall to do anything but to defend at home against our biggest rival. It's like he doesn't even get the rivalry anymore. Like, I had that problem a few seasons ago, and we lost to them in the FA Cup that year, and we lost them in the league, and I was like, he doesn't get the rivalry. But now I'm saying to myself, what kind of comment is that to make? I mean, there was a comment in the chat just now. Someone said, our players are too good to play with these tactics. Players can be happy to play this way. Can't be happy. That's from Scott Buchanan 12. He's right. Yep. How could he be happy playing under this manager right now? It is so... Wilf... We all talk about how Wilf has this body language issue and he gets frustrated. How could he not be, lads, under this? How could he not be playing under Hodgson? He's gone to the point where Batshuayi, when he came off, looked furious at coming off. You could tell in his body language. I always play with that look on his face. Benteke, it's like, come on. He's having a laugh at that comment. He really is.
How could you possibly... I mean, he must be soul-destroying, right? To know that that's your game plan, to know that even before you set foot on the pitch, you're going to be feeding off of scraps the whole game and that you're not going to want to do anything different. That's the problem. That's the problem with all of this. Yeah, right. Yeah. And lots of people called it that. And lots of neutrals today. It's not just, you know, as a lot of people have been accusing those of people have been negative towards Roy, you know, you love him 1 minute, you hate him the next, you know, you're not appreciating what he does. You've got neutral supporters today who've sat down and watched that game calling Palace anti-football. And they're right. They're absolutely right. And I've got to read this comment because I just love the name. Big Fat Peng Ting. I can't believe people are content with this type of football. We've got nowhere in 7 years. And whilst I think I can't blame Roy for anything in the years before him joining, like it right now. you know, I think we're a bigger and better club than we were 7 years ago. But the problem we've got is we've had a manager who's probably outstayed his welcome by 2 seasons minimum. In terms of when he joined, he was probably exactly what we needed for a period of time. But in order for us to progress and grow as a team, and for order for us to have a plan in place, he's just not the guy. And we're finding that now. It's why we've got an aging squad. It's why we've got no seemingly alternative way of playing. And it's driving me absolutely mad right now. And I'm not the only one.
The problem is repeating this. I mean, he's not going anywhere till the end of the season. Because say in his after game interview, he said, you know, Brighton probably could say that they thought that, you know, they deserved a point, which is, if you get out the Hodgson to English dictionary translation, that's they dicked all fucking over us. So, you know, I think even he knew today. You know, the standard comment back, so we usually do four-word reviews on Twitter, and people just say what they think of the game in four words. Cy Pizzy, who is of this parish, said, respect the point, lads. So we can discuss that. Aidan Smith here, it was poor, no doubt about that. But what Roy will get us results with these tactics. Do we want us to be more attacking, like under Pardew, maybe get to a cup final, then relegated? I think the point we need to discuss is the fact that at least we thought when we go 1-0 up, we can usually, I mean, there was, I think DR pulled out the stats, we haven't lost a game in 3 years when we've gone ahead. It looked today like we'd actually lost the ability to see out a game as well. And if that's the one thing we're good at, that, I mean, that's really worrying. And somebody else a bit further up said, what did Brighton get out of 20, you know, having 20 shots, nothing? Well, we were very lucky that their finishing is poor, really poor, because any other side would have beaten us today. Fulham would have beaten us today.
Yeah, let's not forget, you know, Brighton have had a worse 2020 than we have. You know, for all the supposed pretty football that they play, right? Yeah. And for all they're all over Twitter now saying what a rubbish team Palace are. Well, they're rubbish as well, right? Because they don't play effective football. But we had one shot against them, one shot, and it was a penalty. And we are the only team in Premier League history to have ever ended a match with only one shot and it being a penalty.
And an XG of 0.00.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the fact it was a penalty, that's the first time that has ever happened in Premier League history since XG stats have started. And that is ridiculous.
And let's not forget the stat that popped up during the course of the game. What were we worst in? Worst in possession, worst in passes in the opponent's half, was it? We're basically effectively worst, attacking wise,
and worse for successive passing, which is
that's right. Yeah.
So Riedewald has come out. There's an interview on the site that's come up quite soon before we went on here. So, and I'll give you a quote. So he said, "Sometimes we chose the long ball instead of keeping the ball on the ground and going for excellent pass." That's interesting English, but it's going to be a tough game. With that style, the pitch is going to be big, opening up. It was a battle. I mean, that is so obvious, and that is not his fault. That is the manager's fault.
But he's, we picked it out during the game, didn't we? The fact you could see that the game plan wasn't working from the minute. What was it? It was probably about minute 3 or 4, Patrick, we were talking about it, where you could see we'd already started whacking the ball into the channels in the hope that someone might chase onto it. Because whatever we decided to do, just wasn't panning out from the third minute. But we just didn't change it for the whole game. And then let's not even get, I mean, do we even get into the fact that when we did change it, when changes finally did happen, they were made seemingly to invite further pressure. And you all knew it was coming. We were sitting there on the watch long, looking, you know, saying to each other, we're going to concede here because we took forward players off. We moved people about. We backed off and backed off and backed off, and at no stage did we try and do anything about it. And it just goes to show you the first instinct for Roy is defence. You know, we often talk about the idea that attack is quite a good form of defence. There's a saying about that somewhere, isn't there? But at the very least, I would say possession of the ball is quite a good form of defence. You know, that's quite an obvious thing.
And yeah, keeping the ball. Can I just... No, a few people have said this question. We had a goal disallowed, so that's two shots. No... Well, it isn't because it was disallowed, so it wasn't a live play. So it was one shot.
Yeah, great. So I want to get into Alden Smith's comment in just a moment because it's quite a well-structured question. But I do want to take another little walk down Roy Hodgson comment lane, which is not a lane that I particularly enjoy.
That's going to be a little tiny village somewhere, isn't it? Like, it's next to rain.
Quiet, boring.
Absolutely right.
Rain.
So just drink this in, everyone. So the prefix to this, it's on the Team Talk website, is it says, despite their lack of activity up front, Hodgson was pleased with how Palace defended, insisting their approach almost resulted in a win. The quality of the defensive performance and effort they put in against a good team. Hang on, that doesn't even make sense, does it? He told, we defended our way almost to a very good 3 points. Let me just say that again. We defended our way to almost a very good 3 points. We defended our way to almost three very good points.
Do you know what? Yeah, because technically in football, you can't defend your way to more than a single point, because if you don't score a goal, you can't get more than a point. That's the dumbest comment I've ever heard in my life. Seriously. He can't be serious with that comment. It's baffling.
But he says it's something that can happen in the first or 95th minute. If the opponent have the ball around your area, it can fall kindly or get fortune with a deflection, which I'm sure they would say is fully deserved. I mean, should we talk about the chances that they missed? What about fortune?
And you know what? Before we go ahead, I'm really glad this game ended up 1-1 and not 1-0 to us. Because if it was 1-0 to us, every comment he made would be justified today. Every single one. And people would say, oh, stop moaning about Hodgson. We won the match, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you right now, I am so glad in retrospect we got the draw, or they got the draw. Because if we had won that game 1-0, even though I'd love to beat Brighton 1-0, it would have papered over once again all the cracks that are going on that people do not want to see. And this 1-1 is showing people that this man has to go. He has to go. He's way behind the times. He has to go. And again, I want to go back. I actually know Aldous Pitt, by the way. Very nice guy. All right. You know, lives in New York. We go to his Full Factory when it was open to go. The thing about the whole Pardew comment, and you know me, I'm not a Pardew fan. All right. He goes to the cup final. We did not get relegated on them. We would have been, probably. We weren't. But the difference is that at least under Pardew, okay, and I hate to say this because I hate to defend him, we actually played a football that got us to a cup final. Yeah, we lost it. We could have won it. But at least we got – Hodgson doesn't try to win any cup games. He basically wants to just keep us up. I'm sorry if I offend anybody. I'm sick of the attitude of let's just stay up. We're a little old Crystal Palace. Let's stay up. We have got to be past that. We are now, is this our eighth season or seventh season in Premier League? We are an established team. Can we act like one? Can we act like one?
Well, you've just basically answered the question that he's asked there in terms of, well, what is it that we want?
You know, right.
I think as supporters, we're actually saying almost less than the board are. You know, Steve Parish has come out a few times and said the aim is to develop the squad and push into top 10.
Exactly.
Okay. None of us are saying that our anger right now and our frustration is about not being top 10. Right. I mean, we are, aren't we? We are in top 10. Our frustration at the moment is about how badly the squad is being used and how poor it is to watch. And the idea, you know, right now of having to pay to watch Palace. I mean that.
Criminal.
I mean, well, I do. I paid to watch Palace today through my subscriptions. But you know what I mean? It feels like a punishment. It feels like I did something wrong at some point, and this is what I have to.
We've already paid for our season ticket.
Exactly. So.
Come on. But you know what Roy is trying to say there, and this is my attempt at balance, right? What he's been trying to say in the stuff that I was reading out, and what he actually finishes the comment with. Okay. Was that basically sometimes when the opposition, I wouldn't say go gung-ho, I think the word he uses is take the game to you, but sometimes when the opposition take the game to you, it puts you into a siege mentality, which, you know what, I accept that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we started with a siege mentality. That's the problem. The problem isn't that we were put into a siege mentality, because if you watch that game, up until the point we got a penalty with our only 4A forward, and that was all about Andros Townsend being brave, taking someone on, putting the ball in the box, and a mistake at the back for Brighton. But you know what? That's football. You can live with that.
Right.
And after that, we kind of, and Roy used the comment to be almost, we bared our teeth a little bit in the first half. But what is he saying with that? You know, I don't really understand what he's saying with that. So going back to the point, what is it that we want? We want a manager that recognises nullifying the opponent
isn't good enough anymore.
restricting our attacking players to defensive roles more often than not, and asking them to produce a bit of magic in 5 or 10 minutes of attacking play if we have to chase a game. Starting games like that, carry on with games like that, that is no longer good enough, and that is no longer acceptable with what we have.
If I can just play devil's advocate down Roy Hodgson Lane somewhere in Wiltshire, he did say in his interview afterwards, well, he said that we went too much into our shell and got far too deep, defended without an outlet. So it could be possible that he has realised that that was too far down the wrong way, and he might do something about it next game. Maybe. I don't know. I doubt it, but that was too much for Roy Hodgson, the man who clearly goes as far as you can possibly go with that tactic. That was too much for him. So that's just playing devil's advocate.
And Hambo, you know, you mentioned about the defensive mentality. We've been there before. We had Tony Pulis. We had Sam Allardyce. We've been there before. We know what it's like to sit back. We get it. Can we go forward now? You know, it's not like we haven't had managers before who've done that. And even those two were more excited to watch than this guy has been.
Well, arguably, as much as I wasn't a massive fan of him, you know, as a person, arguably Allardyce and Pulis to a point, but they both got a balance right, didn't they?
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
There were Pulis games where we had 20% possession or got a 1-0 win, you know, and those were hard to stomach, but they weren't, it wasn't every game, you know. And the thing is, people, again, we talk about having good results against the top six away and things like that, but the problem is how we treated Brighton, and I think you said this in the game, we treated Brighton the same way we did Chelsea today. How can you possibly do that?
Unbelievable.
You know, and it's bad enough us, you know, giving a clean sheet away to Chelsea, who couldn't keep clean sheets if they were playing in the Championship at the moment. You know, and we've let them have that. But I'm going to pick up on a few comments. I don't want to ignore you guys for too long, really. But so some quick fire stuff so we can catch up. So first thing for you, Mike, Bradley Squire saying if Dyche goes from Burnley, and if they lose Monday and he's sacked or something like that, do you think we'll go for him?
I just don't think that we're going to lose Hodgson because this tactic works sometimes and just enough to keep us nicely above the relegation zone. So it's irrelevant. There's no point talking about managers because he's not going anywhere. He's not getting. The only hope that we can get is that we get Hodgson gets annoyed with his own tactics to the point where he slightly tweets him. That's the only thing that's going to happen.
But Mike, what if the players rebel? Now, I'm talking about, you know, what if the players decide, you know what? Because I found that's happened in the past with players who have gone behind the manager's back and spoke to the board about how he's playing. What if Wilf and, Sacco and, I don't know, Eze go to the board and say, you know, we can play better than this. We have now one of the best goals we've ever had in the Premier League. I don't think anybody can argue that. And we were trying to add more players to that. And we are still playing as if we have 12 decent players. We have no flair. It's ridiculous for me. We have a very good goalkeeper, solid defence, good midfielders. And we're playing the same we've always played. We finally signed the striker in Batshuayi. Supposed to give us goals. Hasn't scored a goal yet in 5 matches. Hasn't really gotten a chance to. But at what point did the players say, you know what, we can't play this anymore?
The thing is that he's surrounded himself with enough of his own minions that if need be, he can go, right, no, Wilf, I've got Benteke. Don't worry about Eze. I've got McCarthy to come back. You know, I've got Butland now. I just think he'll grind it out with even worse performances.
You're not wrong.
But he just favours functional players over anything else. And now there's a time and a place for that. And you know, we do reap the benefits of that sometimes in certain games, certainly in certain spells in games in particular, where the functional players will outperform, you know, a talented opponent. And you'll be looking at someone like McCarthy or, you know, Jeffrey Schlupp at times. And you'll be looking at those players and thinking, you know, I'm glad we've got people who are up for the fight on our team. I'm glad we've got people who are not bothered about being flashy and not throwing themselves to the ground. They're out there playing football and it works great. But, you know, that has become fewer and further between. But look, to move on to comments, just to mention Mark Zaz there, basically confirming the sort of things that we're talking about, although he's described it as Jurassic football, but specifically pointing out the fact it's the not trying to win games and parking the bus that's getting to me. It's getting to all of us, mate, as you can tell. Really is. But Scott Buchanan here, and I'm going to aim this at you, Patrick, because it is something that I know you dislike as much as I do. It says he will probably keep us up. It's a case of being careful what you wish for.
No. With all due respect, Scott, I am really sick of that last part of that comment. I know where it's aimed at, the whole Charlton thing and et cetera, but I'm not having it anymore. We are in the best position we've ever been in. We've got decent ownership. We've got a good squad. We need to push on. And if push on doesn't mean relegation, I'm sorry. It just doesn't mean that. The league has changed since Charlton got relegated and sat curbishly. I'm not having that. Be careful what you wish for. A great name of book, by the way. Just real quick endorsement. Got a book right here, Mr. Jordan's book. So read it quite a few times. But no, I'm not having that attitude. No, I think that that attitude is why we're in the position where we are now. That's why certain fans just content to just put up with what Hodgson's putting us through. No, we've had five men just keep us up. Another one can do the same exact thing, but which one is going to push us forward? That's what I want. We've had managers keep us up. Pardew did it twice. Allardyce did it. Pudis did it. Hodgson's done it. We can do better than this. I'm sorry. And if it's Eddie Howe or whomever, I don't care. I want a manager that's not only going to show me that he can play 2020 type Premier League football, but can push us on and maybe go for a League Cup or something like that. We don't have to play this. No, I'm not having that. I'm sorry. I mean, with all due respect, careful what we wish for. Besides this book, don't want to hear it. Sorry.
I've got to say, I did use a version of this phrasing earlier on Twitter when I was talking with a few people, and it's the idea that, you know, the risk-averse approach stays risk-averse. You know, the idea of being protective of the team and not coming too far out of your comfort zone in case you lose matches, making sure you get just about enough points, that kind of stuff that we're talking about here. And it kind of leads on to something else that Scott was saying about the only stat Roy cares about is the points at the end of the game, and that Scott agrees with that to an extent. Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that is a risk-averse approach. That is saying, yeah, I'm going to look at the 38 games as a whole, and I'm never going to panic when I lose, and I'm never going to panic when we fail to win. I'm going to just keep at this level the whole time. And over the course of the season, we should end up okay.
Yeah.
But that is that being that risk averse, not putting, you know, even in games, not taking that risk of putting an extra player forward, taking a defender off for an attacker when you're losing, that kind of stuff. If you never do that, you never change anything. And it will come back because eventually you would just teams look at what you're doing and they know that they don't need to worry. If you don't change, other people will know exactly what you're doing and they will change. So every team that comes, you look at how we started the season. I don't think it's any coincidence we won our opening two Premier League games, because it only took two Premier League games for people to go, oh, look, they're using a 4-4-2 now. Yep. Oh, look, they're playing counter-attack now. And what happened after the United game? Straight up, Everton fouled us every time we tried to counter-attack, didn't they? And 100%. And the two games since, every Townsend in particular, but Zaha, Schlupp or Eze, whoever's playing on the left at the time, players standing on them when we try and break, basically, almost every time, because they've just seen it. The new tactic from just give it to Zaha, this year we got another tactic, as well as give it to Zaha, we got try and counter-attack. Oh, it's worked that. They've taken two games, Roy. You're going to have to come up with a third tactic. Anyway, I'm being quite facetious, but, you know, that's how it is. Jumping back to a DR Kernaz question. We love a DR Kernaz question.
Yes.
I'm sorry DR's not with us today. This is his channel. This is his his game, and he's not even here.
To be fair to him, he's at work. So, close the door now. Said DR Kernaz is a genius. what you're basically saying there is, you three, not cutting it for me. fair enough.
But DR was basically, he said a few things, but he said that Big Sam was our best manager since promotion. And I think he's probably right there. It just wasn't around long enough for me to feel good about that. But he is asking the question and it's got some degree of debate.
It was Pardew, actually, but honestly, because of the
couple. I can't believe you're saying that. And
I know, and I'm the biggest hater of the man. But no, you know, I have. But again, 6-1, half in another, whatever. I mean,
Well, DR's saying, where do you rate Roy? And I know probably know what you're about to say, Patrick, so I'm going to ask Mike first. Where do you rate Roy in terms of managers we've ever had at the club?
Ever or just promote? Just
well, that you're aware of. I can't ask you about managers you've never heard of or seen.
I was going to say, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to... All right, never mind. Go ahead.
I mean, it really depends. I think 2 years ago, this would be... this kind of steady the ship approach would be exactly what was needed. But right now, I just think our squad's too good for it. And he's a great manager with a less good squad. But, we've signed some good players and there's no need for this now. Football's meant to be entertainment. So, somebody just said, Dale Martin, yes, football's a business, but it's also entertainment, in brackets, allegedly. It's not. And I mean, we're not going to get new kids being Palace fans if the time they get to watch on TV, we play like that. I mean, I'd honestly rather we just went down than another 5 years of it.
I do feel that way, I have to say. And it's not an easy thing to say, but, I hate it because I know it's to a degree it's nostalgia and it's nostalgia for a time in my life.
Sound like West Ham fans moaning. Yeah. But... it's fine. It's great. He's getting enough points. But at the same time, do you know you can have somebody that's like really anti-COVID and they stay inside and never take any risks and then their life is boring as hell? I'd rather the odd risk was taken and the odd trip to the pub just so my life isn't soul-destroyingly, soul-crushingly dull. And this is the football interpretation of somebody that didn't need to stay at home shielding but has done for 7 months anyway.
Yeah. A great analogy. Brilliant.
There we go.
I want to get to the end of Kronas's question. Better than Kopolos, too high. Is DR okay today? Better than Kopolos, too high. That is so blasphemous. I couldn't even.
To be fair, he's trying to get a reaction from you because he doesn't remember.
He got one. as far as that, matches I've seen, Kopolos by far and away the best man we've ever had. After him, I would probably go with Terry Venables, would be second. I wouldn't put Hodgson anywhere near the top. Eight. I'd have Pulis ahead of him. I'd have Alois ahead of him. I put Burr ahead, or first manager I ever saw Palace, ahead of him. I might even put Steve Kember ahead of him. I put Dougie ahead of him. And I'm not even... I will put Dougie ahead of Roy Hodgson. So where are we now? Eighth? I mean...
It's just below Steve Bruce for me.
Bruce for that short time was great. I love Holloway. Sorry. I love Ollie. I know it didn't work in the Premier League. So... what are you, nine now? He's not even in the top 10, DR. So you want to be funny about Steve Coppola higher? How about Steve Coppola a lot lower? How's that sound?
Patrick, what was Edmund Goodman like?
Yeah, I've never had a joke yet before. First man that won the title with like in the Division 3 South. He was pretty good, I heard.
Yeah, he was excellent. I was just wondering what he was like.
Can I use Cliff Perry's comment here as a launch? We were trying out for an earlier intro for Benteke as we couldn't hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
To me, I just don't think that any one player was going to be the solution today. Because of the way we were playing, I really think we could have brought anyone on and no one person was going to save stuff. Zaha could not. I mean, he hadn't touched the ball in about the first 20 minutes of the second half. I just don't think Benteke would... there was no outlet ball because nobody was even pinging a ball that was anywhere near anyone. Our actual pass ratio of passes that actually reached their man were rubbish. They were 69%. I mean, that is... so one in three balls didn't hit their man. That's pathetic. And I really don't think Benteke would have done anything to help that along, but...
I will say is that based on the comment by Gyro about playing the long ball, and I remember towards the end of the match, Chris made the comment, a couple of balls played to Wilf. We're like, why are we playing the ball long to Wilf? They're never going to win that ball. If we were playing a tactic that would have probably suited Benteke more than Batshuayi or Wilf, I'd have taken Wilf off and put left Batshuayi on because Wilf was beyond frustrated in that game, beyond frustrated second half. He didn't touch the ball. You saw him arguing towards the end with Tariq Lamptey. He was totally frustrated, getting involved in stuff he shouldn't have got involved in. I mean, to me, bringing one for Wolf only because, again, we were playing long balls to nobody with no plan. So who better to do something like that than Benteke? Poor Benteke, right?
Yep, absolutely true. Right. Yeah, I can't really add anything to that. You pretty much said what I was going to say, Patrick. I don't want to jump back up. I'm going to steam through a few comments because some of them are just observations and the things that we've covered. But I did want to pick out what Fake Italian said a little while ago. He said failing to get Sarr is a big mistake. You could easily see Brighton getting their goal. And Roy has no clue about having a plan B. We have decent players, but he plays poor football. And I think, you know, the comment on Sarr is a big one. I don't think, given the way that we went about it, that we realistically thought we were going to get him. I think it right. was I think it was a case of chucking a bid in, seeing what happens, but not really expecting much. But I definitely think he would have been a much better choice than Benrahma, and I think he had more chance of actually playing because he's a very good player, and also he plays on the right hand side where we do need some competition for places. But having said that, it kind of suits the old system more than the new one. But I do think, you know, I hope we'll do something in January. But I think the point on plan B there is absolutely right.
So I have a comment because I saw, I'm sorry, I can't give the person credit. There was a comment in there about why would players want to come play for Palace? And I want to just touch on that, if you get you guys' opinion. Now, we failed to get Benrahma, we failed to get Sarr, but the truth of the matter is, do you think, one, Roy even wanted those two players? And two, why would they want to come and play for Palace? Let's look at players that of the similar ilk that have come to Palace. You've got Eze, you've got Batshuayi. Batshuayi did have a great loan spell the first time. Right now, he is struggling to contribute more. Eze, we know he's going to take a while to bed in. Max Meyer wasn't Roy's player, but was here, doesn't play. I'm sorry if you could just... The player we got last year from Cardiff, who never played... For some reason, I don't know why, all of a sudden I forgot his name. He didn't play at all. And I Campbell helped me out.
Yeah, you've caused me to have a problem as well.
Right. Mike,
begins with Camarasa.
Never played. Never. We all don't know. We believe it was some incident happened on the training ground. Never played. Why would someone of any flair, of any ilk, want to come play for Palace right now? I wouldn't want to. And the players we do have, like Wilf, who even though he's played great and scored goals, looked frustrated a lot of time. Eze, Townsend, but I give him credit, done really well. I just don't see why a player of any player would ever come play for us right now.
Well, also in the chat, Dave Newman has got the debate raging on who do the people want if Roy goes. And look, we've talked about Dyche a little bit here. In the past, I've gone on record as saying that I quite an admirer of Daniel Farke at Norwich. I think he's but yeah, what Patrick coughed, that's what we all expect. We all expect it to be a fairly planned transition, if you like. That's what you'd expect. Howe's currently taking a break from football. Roy is coming towards the end of his managerial career.
Roy's taking a break right now too, apparently.
yeah, it seems that way. But you know, basically, you know, logic almost aligns the stars in that one. And I'm not a big fan of Howe, but I am a big fan of anyone but Roy right now, and I'm sorry to say that, and I possibly don't mean it as badly as it sounds, but I just don't know anymore. And I think Neil is articulating that well, quite well actually. Neil Dulake, I don't know, whatever, however you pronounce it. Sorry, Neil, for mangling your last name, but he said, "I respect Roy as a person and as a manager, but enough is enough of this before it's too late. Please, Parish, get Eddie Howe in now." I do want to address, we sort of talked about it, Andrew Bullock's comment around Hodgson being conservative and stable, which is not risky. We did talk about that, and he said comfortably picking up points, so we are safe. And what I'm going to just add to that, the certainty of the so we are safe, and I'm going to paraphrase a relatively well-known saying by just basically saying we're safe until we're not. All right, that's the bottom line. At some point, you'll be saying we are safe as we get relegated. And that could be this season. You know, we think we've started well. We think we've had a tough run of games. Those things are probably true. But if you kind of just look that little bit broader, look at the 2020 statistics and how we've performed, what is the trend? What does that look like? The trend tells you everything about where we're heading right now. And we've got to change as soon as we can. Colin Squires, interestingly, is saying that if Pardew had known how to close a game out instead of going for it, instead of keep going for it would be the right way. I'm confused. That was his problem. I know what you're saying, though, Colin. Yeah, if he knew how to actually do that point of shutting up shop, then you're right.
I mean, Pardew knew how to close a deal, just not necessarily on the football pitch.
edit point.
We're live. We can't edit that. And, can I just quick disclaimer? The views of Mike Scott are entirely those of Mike Scott and not Back of the Nest or any of the associated people. Brackets, please sue Mike Scott. I do think there's a valid point in there, and Swansea springs to mind, you know, but one of the most traumatic experiences of our lives, I think, that 5-4. Anyway, so quite a lot going on there. You've covered Dale Martins, and we're steaming through into some other comments here. Luke quite rightly saying, I think we're setting up for the next manager, and I think we've basically said to you that we think we are as well. Neil's talking a little bit disparagingly about Eddie Howe, and I completely understand why. He had quite a good amount of money with Bournemouth, but I think the spell of that Eddie Howe had that I actually like was the one that he had in getting Bournemouth promoted. I think once he got them promoted,
yeah,
it's a very different. You think about that club when they came up, the size of the ground, the players that they had. You know, it's a tough ask, and it's very easy to forget that, you know, they're a little bit like Wigan, who stayed in the Premier League for as long as they could, way beyond what they ever should, and have kind of dropped out now. You're probably seeing that a little bit with Bournemouth, and it was only the fact that somebody turned up with a bit of money that kept them there as long as it did. So I think we're in danger, just because Eddie Howe looks like a Thunderbird puppet, we're in danger of being a little bit disrespectful to his creepy style of management. And
just to be clear, I'm not sure I'm a huge Eddie Howe fan, but it's perspective. And if you want to compare him to Hodgson at this point, I'll take basically anybody. And that's how bad it's gone. And I hate being like that. I'd rather have a real plan. Like, your Daniel Farke one is a really good one. People would say he's not a good manager because of getting relegated, but Norwich actually did a great job in getting promoted and in staying up and in how they played at the time last year. I mean, some of the games that they played, and there was not a very talented squad. I mean, you've seen some of the players now, in retrospect, have gone to top clubs. The defenders have all gotten sold. Brendia was supposed to be going to Real Madrid or Barcelona. So they've got a talented team. But I think he is a good manager, but he'd never get a Palace job because people say, oh, well, he got Norwich relegated. But then so did Eddie Howe. So again, I just want somebody, you know, somebody who's not named way off at this point.
Well, we all better work on our Daniel Farke impression.
That's good.
Can I put a quick question to you before I have to put my little girl to bed? Do you agree that Gyro should be starting every game? And controversially, was the signing of him an indication that, given time, De Boer could have done a good job? No, to the first bit. Do you agree that Gyro should be starting every game?
Yes.
Go on, Patrick.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, to watch how he was today, he's that bit of calmness you need in the centre of the pitch, and he's someone that's going to pick out a pass and just calm the play down. I mean, even today, like I said, the few times that he got on the ball, I felt comfortable. And when he didn't have it, it was all over the place. You know, we're trying to get the ball forward, you know, route one football. And when he had the ball, it was more, you know, I'll pass sideways, I'll look forward, I'll look back, wherever. It was calm. The same way, again, like Eze plays. We need more players like that and less players who just want to get rid of the ball and who are afraid to do that. And I think that, yeah, Gyro should play every single match, as far as I'm concerned.
There we go. I'm going to have to skip some comments. One quick mention of the fact that, because you've got a fantastic name, Ruben Dario Elizalde Adumini. Adumi?
Wow.
I did well with the first two. So apologies for mangling two of your four names, but four names is quite greedy. Anyway, he says, I'm done with Roy and his defensive tactics since last season. We need a new manager, young with new ideas. A team with more balance, with Eze and Meyer in the first team. And I just thought that was an interesting comment, given one of the conversations we had in the watch along in the Brighton game today, guys. And that was talking about the fact that Max Meyer wasn't in the squad. And I'll just repeat what I said there, really. And that's the reason Max has not ever played under Roy Hodgson in any sustained way is because we don't play a system under Roy. Neither our 4-3-3/4-5-1 or this 4-4-2 that Max Meyer suits. You know, there is a role for Max Meyer at a team that plays a different way, that will allow him to, you know, float about the pitch and make play wherever he kind of sees fit, almost a free central role. But, you know, you'd need a central midfield three of that, and you'd need not to want them to all be defensive midfielders. And unfortunately, we don't have that. And similarly, in the switch to 4-4-2, he could You could use him in the Eze role, but it's not where he's at his best. You could use him centrally, but it's not where he's at his best in a two. Or you could stick him out on the right, but, you know, he's not an out-and-out right winger either. So where does he play? Can't play up top, can't play just behind a striker. There's no real role for him. So it doesn't even matter if you're one of those people who thinks Max Meyer is a great player with who hasn't had an opportunity, or you think he's a hugely overrated player who's basically the same player as Johnny Williams, but with a more exotic name. And then, you know, it doesn't matter with either of those because there's just still not a place for him in the squad. I have to think it's a shame, but if there is a system where you could get, you know, Eze and Meyer in the same team, and, you know, that's two players really comfortable on the... you need to just zoom out a little bit, Patrick. Bring it back towards you. There you go. There you go. Good stuff.
Do you know what worries me about that little speech there, Hambo? That makes me think that Eze is going to have exactly the same problem and we're not going to see him until Hodgson buggers off.
Mike, thank you. Thank you. You read my mind. It's exactly what I'm thinking. And again, Max Meyer... I love the John Yester comment about exotic name, by the way. It's brilliant. I am a fan, but it's not because I've seen him play a million times and I think he's a great player. I just think that if you've got a player like him, who I think he's technically gifted, you find a way to get him in the lineup that works for you. Good managers, that's what they do. They find a way to get the best out of the best players. Look how long it took this man now to figure how well Wolf Zaha plays. It took him three seasons. Where's Wolf playing now? Where he played two seasons ago? No, he moved him up top because it makes more sense to get Wolf up top, right? Now he's got like four or five goals. He sees it in Wolf, but doesn't see it in Meyer. He doesn't see it in Camarasa, and he won't see it in Eze. That's the problem I have. If you're a manager, you have to manage the players that you have. Stop the functionality with the CDM and the central defensive midfielder mentality and be a little bit more expansive. If it doesn't work, I'll be the first one to say, you know what? You lost 5-4 to Fulham. You know, what is he doing? Blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't even try to get players like Meyer into the mix. And it really frustrates. That's why, again, I'll go back to it again. I'm glad we don't sign players like Benrahma and Saka. They weren't going to play anyway. You see them on the bench or not in the squad would have gotten me so frustrated. Would have gotten Parrish frustrated. Would have gotten Dougie frustrated. It's ridiculous. So, again, I wish Meyer would play more. But, again, not because I think he's a great player. Just I think that Roy is just so set in his ways, he won't do anything different.
No, I mean, there's a question in from Jay. We were talking about Eddie Howe earlier on. He said, does Eddie Howe play attacking football? Now, not to answer that question, really, but I think it's worth mentioning that we're not saying, you know, the opposite of what Roy's doing doesn't necessarily mean everyone's saying, let's play attacking football.
Right.
You know, and this is a problem with a lot of the arguments on this. Like, for example, you know, let's say right now, you know, we're currently laying into Roy Hodgson a little bit.
Right.
More than a little bit, right? But that doesn't mean to say, for example, personally, it doesn't mean to say I don't respect Roy Hodgson and I don't think he's a good manager for the right club and the right situation. And I don't think 45 years in management shows that, in fact, when you look at managers in general, he's been exceptional over his career. You know, he'll probably go down as one of the best because of that longevity, because of the variation he's had in his career. He's obviously a good manager, but that doesn't mean that what he's doing now is right for us and our squad. And ultimately, it is just an opinion, as it is with any of us, right? So when someone says, you know, does Eddie Howe play attacking football? I do think you have to be careful in saying that no one has said, well, I want Crystal Palace to play attacking football.
Right.
It's nice. The idea that it is nice, isn't it, to think we're going to dominate possession and attack and score loads of goals and the opposition won't score any, because ultimately that's the perfect thing, isn't it? That's football perfect. But what we're actually saying is there's got to be a trade-off, isn't there, between attack and defence. And right now we have a manager whose faith in the squad, no matter who seems to be in it, seems to be based around stopping opposition playing, negating everybody first and foremost, and then seeing if you can win the game. And, you know, we're just saying that attitude now, after 4 years, it just seems like it's no longer the way to go. Now, if you're happy with that personally, if right now you can sit there and say, no, I hope Roy never retires, and I want us to play like this every week, that's fine. That's great. I mean, I don't understand, but fine. So be it. So don't think, because you don't want one thing, you immediately want the opposite. We're not arguing that now. We're arguing for a change, for something different, but it has to be better, you know. And at some point, you know, there's a risk involved in whoever you appoint, whether it's Eddie Howe or whoever, it's still a risk that they might not do as well as Roy was doing.
And Hambo, the question about attacking football is interesting. What kind of style is Jose Mourinho known for? Defensive football, correct? But now he's got Gareth Bale, Son Heung-min, Harry Kane, Lamella, Lo Celso, Ali. Look at him today. He's up 3-0 in the game. That's not Jose football. Oh, yeah, they got pegged back to 3-3. But my point is, he's a defensive manager. He's always been that way. But he now has Bergwijn. He's got extremely attacking players. He's going to have changed his style. It may not work for today's match, but I bet over time it does. So you adjust. So you're absolutely right. You don't have to go from one extreme to the other. But again, Roy Hodgson, and again, respecting the man and liking him are two different things. I respect what he's done, but I just feel like his sell-by day is well gone. He is well past Manchester. His age are not around anymore. Ferguson's gone. Wenger's gone. You know, you've got a lot younger managers in football now. The game has changed. He needs to change. He's not willing to do it. That's fine. Just move on. That's what I'm asking for. I'm not trying to denigrate the man. He obviously is a tremendously, his CV is ridiculously long and great. But at this point, I just think for Palace, he's not the right manager anymore. I just think that the manager for him is just passed him by.
I think there's a good question here from RonJill73. And I realise I've skipped someone, go back to him. Do you think the front players enjoy playing for Roy? Well, I don't see how they can. You know, it's absolutely destroying their stats for a start. You know, they're feeding on scraps. You could see how angry Zaha was. You got the impression from Hodgson's post-match interview that he wasn't impressed with Zaha, who I really don't see what the hell he could do. You know, my worry is that these players are going to be deeply unhappy by the time we get a new manager, and it might not be repairable. That's the main thing that worries me. A couple of comments on Max before you get into that. Max really hasn't taken his opportunity and he's too small for the Premier League as well.
Yeah, I think some of that, I don't think that, I mean, if you think about, you know, David Silva wasn't too small for the Premier League, was he? So,
Messi too small, also way too small.
Yeah, but I understand, you know, physicality was definitely an issue for our management team, if you like. So, I also get that. And I also think there's some truth in him not taking his opportunity. I just think ultimately, even he did have a run of games, I think, playing sort of left side of central midfield for a while. And you kind of thought that would be it. But other than I think he had a couple of nice finishes here and there, not really done it. So I think that's fair. But it's hard to, you know, for any player to come in and play in a few games here and there and, you know, build up that rhythm and you know, keep that place. Some do, some don't. I think, you know, Mark Zads was talking about Roy saying that he can't see him getting sacked, particularly with Corona, and Palace will see him as a safe pair of hands. He's a safe pair of hands until he isn't, isn't he? You know, if in 10 games time we're still averaging around this number of points per game, you know, the table might look a little bit more threatening than it currently does. So we'll see to try and judge things after 10 games in a season. So we'll see where we end up. You know, we've got a run of games where you look at it and on paper we should be getting some points. Not if we surrender possession and don't attack and don't create any goal-scoring opportunities, we won't. But, you know, I think we'll know a lot more about how this season is going to go in the next five to ten games, I think. Jay saying play Eze in CAM, as it's often referred to, as sort of central attacking midfield. In behind the striker, Patrick, we love that, don't we?
Yeah,
but we don't play that way. So, you know,
it's never going to happen.
Which is a shame because he's definitely, as QPR fans have repeatedly said, and we've talked about a lot, that is definitely his best position. I do want to take this absolute hospital pass of a question from Edmund Brack. And ask you both this. Who plays a better brand of football, Peter Taylor or Roy Hodgson?
Oh, my gosh. Mike?
That's tough, isn't it? I mean, they're both the absolute champagne of football, and it's it's exactly why you want to fork out £600 for a season ticket. I mean, I'd peel this into that mix as well. It's exactly why we became Palace fans, yeah. You know, I always think probably erroneously that Palace, when you talk about Palace's DNA, which I know is a load of shit, but, you know, flair, counter-attacking football, 40% possession, beat them on the break. We're so close to that, we just don't have the break. You know, the 40% possession we're fine with. Yeah,
that's tough. We averaged 33% now. Come on, mate.
Sorry.
Do you know what? Yeah. That's a great. I mean, I'm not going to answer it seriously because it's not a serious question for me. But I have totally in my mind wiped out Peter Taylor's managerial record at Palace because I saw him as a player. And Peter Taylor as a player was one of the best players they ever put on a Palace shirt, and it wasn't even close. So I only remember Peter Taylor as a player. So I refuse to remember him as a manager because it would totally mess up my memories of that man. Really.
I mean, to be honest, Roy is my choice out of those two. But quite
probably too, yeah.
Whose interview was it recently where they talked about what happened with the players under Taylor? Oh, that's going to bug me. I read it recently. It was in, I think it was in the Club magazine, that 90+7 magazine. Who was it? Yes, it was Leon Court. You're absolutely bang on.
Talking about his brother, yeah. Leo Loftus.
Yeah, he was saying basically what happened with Peter Taylor was that the players really turned on him very, very quickly. Because if you remember, the first couple of games, we were decent. And then it just all fell apart. And it looked like we were the most boring. I'll tell you now, because Hodgson's football is better than Peter Taylor's. Because the football under Taylor actually made me contemplate things I don't want to talk about. I just literally, you know, you'd have rather have knitting than watching football. It was that bad. There was a game we played against, I think it was Wimbledon or something like that. I went with a mate who's I think he's a United fan, the one who went with me that day. And anyway, and we just basically watched Palace pass the ball up and down the wings and just do nothing all game. Yeah. And I couldn't even think. It almost killed me. My brain had almost shut down entirely. So I can't say Hodgson's ever done that. But Leon Court was talking about the fact that...
Give it time, Hambo.
Yeah, time. Maybe. One more season, maybe.
You're going to kill me.
Behind the scenes, Court was saying that basically the senior players, and he was suggesting it was the likes of, I think, Friedman, yes. I don't know if it was Popovich at the time, but certainly Dougie and Dougie, the more senior pros. And I think he was talking about, was it maybe Hudson and McCarthy or someone like that? Basically, whoever the centre-backs were at the time. And he was saying that they really turned on Taylor and basically the team, as a result, stopped respecting him. He's saying at half-time they used to say things to him like, oh, you know, you're going to get sacked in the morning anyway. What's the point of listening to you? That's at half-time. Can you imagine that? Imagine at halftime your manager comes in and says, guys, that wasn't good enough. I need you to shape up. And the player's going, why should we listen to you? You're not even going to be here Monday. You know,
but in fairness, you know, in this book, he wasn't a big fan of his early. Jordan was not a Taylor fan either.
No.
He was a fan as a player, not the manager. So that stuff, on top of him not being a fan, he was never going to last as the manager because Jordan did not like Peter Taylor at all. So.
But anyway, it's a bit of a digression and probably a welcome one from all the pain. But we've got a few other questions sitting in there. And I think, you know, Gary Milton was talking about the fact that there's got to be a happy medium, great in the back and good going forward. That's the dream, Gary. Absolutely right. Neil again saying, in the current situation, would you pay 15 quid to watch us play? No. There's got to be better ways of, and you know, cheaper ways and potentially free ways of doing that, eh? Bantamweight Boxing saying, how would you set Palace out for their next game? I don't have a problem with the system. I have a problem with the mentality. And, you know, I don't see even too much with wrong with what the squad that, in fact, the lineup, the first 11 that Roy picked. There's just got to be something different about how we approach the game, our plan of action, how far forward the players are. What do we do when the team is starting to drop deep because they're under pressure? How do we adjust, you know? And a little bit of tactical flexibility. That's what we'd like to see. And there was a time in that where we sort of asked the question, oh, have we gone three in midfield? And we thought we had for about 2 minutes until we realised it was Roy Hodgson, and we hadn't. We did, like, right at the very end with substitutions, you know, making a difference, we did, but it's just the kind of lack of action. I think it's more a case of, you know, you'd like to see a plan appropriate to the opposition. And you know, it's Fulham up next, isn't it? And if we let Fulham have the ball and try to hit them on the counter and don't do anything different and end up losing, then really what do we say to that? So fingers crossed we don't see that.
Well, I mean, what I could say is that a loss to Fulham might be one of the few situations where you might get your wish. Because the tide against Hodgson would be obscene if we got outplayed by a team destined to go down in 20th place.
Really?
It's interesting.
I think if this were a situation where it's an away match anyway, but if we had the fans in the stadium, and I remember, I'll never forget it, the way that the fans turned on Holloway, and we knew that the next match he was not going to be there. I think the fans were in the stadium and could you know, voice their displeasure. I think there'll be a chance, but I'm with Mike. I don't think until January, when something may happen because of a certain individual may be available, I don't think it's going to happen until January. So we're talking about 3 months of this. I don't see it happening prior to that, unless he decides to put an interim, like bring Dougie down and have Dougie, you know, run this side until January. I don't think Hodgson will not walk away. He will not walk away from this because that's not in his DNA. So I don't think there'll be a change, but again, here's hoping.
Indeed. Look, we're going to obviously have to bring this to a close relatively soon. We've got a few more comments to get to first. But obviously, thank you to everyone who's contributed. No matter what you said, no matter what view you put across, always welcome to hear it, and everything's been read and considered as we go. So Will has asked a very interesting question, and something we have debated a little bit before in the podcasts. And he's saying, do you blame Benteke for his form or Hodgson? He's saying that he blames Hodgson. And he said, if we played to his strengths, we'd have a 10 to 15 goal striker. I think it's a really interesting point. You know, I'll answer my little bit first, then let Patrick and Mike jump in. I think it's no coincidence that when we bought him, he scored 17 goals because we played in a way that suited him. I think you can't fully blame Roy Hodgson because, you know, the player has a responsibility as well, and he has lost form, he has lost confidence, but he's also been wasteful of certain chances. But I think what happened is he got knocked out of any kind of a rhythm in terms of playing games regularly, getting chances created from regularly. And the problem is, if you don't know where your chances are coming from, so for example, with Benteke, we all know, get crosses into the box. But if you don't know when a player's going to cross, or when he's going to cut back, or when he's going to take that, you know, extra touch or whatever, if you're not playing on instinct anymore, you just, you know, it just becomes impossible. And I really think for his own good, he should have got out of the club a little while ago if he could have gone anywhere. But, you know, look at the stats. You know, before he played under Roy Hodgson, he was scoring goals pretty much everywhere he went. And if you look at other strikers under Roy, certainly as Palace manager, who scored big numbers of goals? You know, nobody. And you could argue we've not had, you know, good enough strikers. I suppose that's one argument you might take. But, you know, for me, I don't think it, and I think Scott's just said the same thing at the bottom there, Scott Buchanan. It doesn't seem to matter who we're talking about up front. It seems that we've struggled to score goals no matter who's up there.
I mean, I'd say that his conversion ratio is really low, especially with shots rather than headers. Certainly, I mean, he only scored 9 last season, but he stayed in the side because Benteke was just getting the chances and not putting them away. He'd definitely score more in a different system. You know, if he was still under Allardyce, he'd be getting a lot more headers, which he does put away. But it's a man bereft of confidence, so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But he's missed a lot of shots in the last couple of years. So to me, it's 75% Benteke, 25% Hodgson.
In the interest of time, we'll leave that there. In terms of that question, we've got Jay. I'll go back to Scott's question around Fulham to end with. But Jay's saying, do you think the longer that Roy stays, the more damaging to the squad it is, and harder for the next manager? Patrick, I mean, I think there's some truth in that. How about you?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. The detriment it could have, but I agree. I mean, I've watched a lot of Eze interviews, and one of the things he talked about is when he first was released to one of his earlier releases, he had, you know, got to QPR. I think it's Andy Impey, the one that kind of took him under his wing and kind of gave him confidence back. And I think that my fear is that Eze, if he doesn't play and or loses, you know, his confidence, the next man's going to have a very difficult time, not only just getting him to play, but just getting his confidence up. So I had not thought about that, Jay. I think that's a great point. I think Wolf's pretty resilient. Wolf's been through a ton of managers and can deal with it. But I worry about someone like Eze, who may or may not, maybe even a younger player, let's say like a Scott Banks, may not even given a chance under Hodgson. Tariq Mitchell, you know, probably. I think that's a really good point. I think that the longer he stays and under this type of rigid, boring system, certain types of players, Gyro, for instance, may suffer under him. So, good point.
Okay. There's been obviously the questions around who we'd like to see as the next manager. I've said Daniel Farke myself. There's a suggestion there from Oliver Scott of David Wagner, which is an interesting one. I know at one stage, I do believe he was liked by people at the club. Certainly an interesting manager. Did an extremely, extremely good job at Huddersfield. And I actually felt a little bit sorry for him when it went wrong there, because I don't think it was anything to do with him. It was just, I think it was a club that was overstretched and unable to compete in the Premier League. I don't think they've benefited from getting rid of him. I've forgotten where he's gone on now, but you know, I think he's a decent manager and maybe deserves another crack at the Premier League. Sorry, there's more questions coming in. I'm getting confused. Where was that one that I wanted to actually read out? There you go, from Scott. Said, we'd love to know how many will pay to watch us against Fulham. How can we get the figures? I don't think anyone's going to be releasing the pay-per-view figures easily for the Fulham game. But I, you know, it's funny, people do tend to part with their cash to watch their teams. You'd hope that movement suggesting people don't gain some ground, because I don't think the problem is paying is necessarily a pay-per-view. I think it's the sum of money.
Yeah, it's got to be a fiver, hasn't it? And can we end, providing you two haven't looked on whoscored.com, tell me who you think whoscored.com made the man of the match, both of you.
Is it as in the Palace man of the match, or the
no, whole the whole game, 20 odd people.
My guess would be Tariq Lamptey.
Hambo?
I am going to go with...
Lewis Dunk.
James MacArthur.
Well, now, amazingly, Lewis Dunk got 5.7 despite the fact he got sent off. Yeah. Player of the game, according to whoscored.com, who we use heavily on this pod, Jeffrey Schlupp with a 7.5.
Oh, really?
And the ratings, the average ratings for both teams are almost identical. So I don't know what's happened there, because they had 20 shots and we had one. But the only other thing I wanted to mention was we haven't mentioned our sponsor, Pitch Sport, today.
Oh, there you go, Pitch Sport Football. Google the words Pitch Sport Football. Download their app, get involved. That's a great reminder. I'm just about to go on there and rate the manager and players for the last game. Wonder how well they'll do there. But you also get to do your predictions as well and all that kind of stuff. A couple of other late suggestions for managers. Rafa Benitez from Tony Holt would love it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Brilliant.
And Neil DeLake. Oh, I don't know. Still don't know. I got it right, Neil, but thank you for understanding. He suggested Mike Bassett, the fictional England manager.
I'm watching that, by the way, on YouTube. I mean, on Netflix. Pretty funny.
Peter, David Wagner was sacked by Schalke after a terrible run of form. So,
good update.
So he's available.
Just for thank you to the people that are not listening live as well. We've tried a live pod today just because we're all a little bit angry. So if you're listening back on the podcast, thank you.
Yeah, definitely worth thanking. But yeah, in particular, those of you that have joined us live and helped us actually put together this show without us having to write anything, hugely appreciated. Something a little different. Don't think we'll necessarily do all of our review shows like this, but there'll be plenty more content on this channel. Most of it by DR, obviously, because he loves it. But make sure you're liking and subscribing if you haven't done so already. Subscribe to our podcast and all your chosen podcast apps. Rate and review. Please, 5 stars. I don't care if you like it or not. Just give us 5 stars. I just want 5 stars. But thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for Mikey for lurking in the background and producing. To Patrick, Mike, and the Lord Jesus Christ. I don't really want to thank him, but...
Via Joe Ward.
Yeah, via Joe Ward, yeah. Cheers, guys. See you later.
Back of the Nest Review Show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around.
You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.